From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. By the time the outrage spreads over something unbelievable that Donald Trump has done, he has usually done something else that is equally or even more outrageous. Trump's tenure in the White House has so severely damaged our expectations of a president that many look back with nostalgia at George W. Bush. Our standards are so skewed that when Trump behaves himself, we breathe a sigh of relief at the absence of circus and carry on hoping the nightmare will end soon. But my guest, who has covered Trump for decades and wrote a best-selling book about him, says in his new book that what the Trump administration is doing to America is, quote, even worse than you think. That is literally the title of the book. David K. Johnston is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter, and his New York Times bestseller was called The Making of Donald Trump. He's also the founder and editor of DC Report, and his latest book that he now joins me to discuss is called It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. Welcome to the program, David.
Sonali, thank you for having me on.
Thanks so much for joining us. So one of the first points that you make in this new book about Trump, you've written two books about Trump before this, but one of the first points you make is that Trump's presidency is not about America, it's about Trump himself. However, of course, his slogan, his tagline is Make America Great, America First. So the message that he has put out right from the start is that America comes first, much more so than the messages other presidents have done. But you're saying it's actually the exact opposite.
Right. Well, Donald is a master grifter and con artist. In fact, given the position he's in today, I think arguably he is the greatest con artist in the history of the world. He's never done a day of public service, literally not one day of public service, before he took the oath of office. He has spent his entire adult life involved in criminal activity, cheating workers, including workers here who were not here legally and didn't have documents to work from Poland, swindling investors, cheating small businesses that would deliver goods and services to him, and he'd refuse to pay for them and then say, well, sue me. And of course, there were lots of small businesses, so he just moved on to others to rip them off. A man who's gone through two income tax fraud trials. They were civil trials, but he lost them both. He's confessed to sales tax fraud. He has spent years deeply entangled with a major international cocaine trafficker doing things that make no sense whatsoever, because he was a casino owner and could and should, I believe, have lost his license for it. But if they were in business together, everything he did made perfect sense. What Donald Trump successfully did, and I admire his skill at this, he got the news media during the campaign to forget that one of our basic jobs is to do what's called scrub the candidate. You can go back and read news accounts about who Barack Obama smoked dope with in high school in Hawaii and who his playmates were in kindergarten in Indonesia. You can read about George W. Bush's activities as a young man, but there were no comparable looks into Trump's background, even though there's a very, very robust public record. And I offered to provide documents from that record to reporters. In America, they weren't interested very much. Overseas, lots of interest.
And so do you think that reticence from the media to dig into his background was primarily because most treated his candidacy as a joke and didn't really expect him to be president? But that, of course, helped buoy him to among his base.
Well, it's a little more complicated than that. Donald's been talking about being president since 1985. When he ran in 2012, the politics reporters all treated him as a serious candidate. And Lawrence O'Donnell of MSNBC and I were the only people out there saying he's not running for president. He's running for a new contract for his TV show. When he announced that, I should be president, but my TV show needs me more, the political reporters all felt, the politics reporters, that they'd been had. So when he announced in 2016, they treated him as a joke. The very day of his announcement, I started telling people, no, you don't know Trump like I do. He's serious this time. And his campaign was so unusual, so different than anything we have ever seen. I've compared it to when you rubberneck on the highway and when you look across at the accident, you also get to see a marching band, dancing girls, and fireworks. We know from things said by Les Moonves, the head of CBS, and the late Roger Ailes of Fox, that when they had Trump on, people watched. The minute they went away from Trump, people turned off. So there was this fascination with the campaign and a forgetfulness about the underlying duty to look into who is the candidate. And in this case, it was terribly, terribly important to do so. And by the way, I called my former editors at the New York Times and some other journalists and said, I've got all these documents, I'll help you. There was frankly not much interest.
So now here we are, just over a year since Trump has been president. And it's tempting to think that he is shooting from the hip, that everything that's transpiring is and that comes out of his mouth is what, you know, is based on the last thing that somebody put in his hands. But there is a cohesiveness to his strategy, right? And this is what your book is about, to try to make sense of what it is that his administration's goal really is. So let's start with the issue of the economy, because that's the one that he says that he, you know, became president to fix. And what he has done right from day one is put as many people with Wall Street background and billionaire credentials into his White House as possible. That's a pretty clear strategy, right?
Donald doesn't have so much a strategy as the people he brought into the government have a strategy. Donald said he was going to drain the swamp, and he was going to go after Wall Street, and particularly Goldman Sachs. And what he immediately did was turn the swamp of Washington, D.C. into a paradise for swamp monsters on Wall Street and bring in all these Goldman Sachs people. It was a con. Donald's whole life is a con. But the people he brought with him, the people that Steve Bannon and General Flynn and others brought with them, they were dedicated to the proposition which Bannon announced quite openly, that they were going to destroy the United States government as we know it. Bannon said, I'm a Leninist. And of course, that means you want to destroy the existing order. And so in all of these federal agencies, they have appointed people who have been working against the interests of the forgotten man. Remember, Trump said that I'm here for the forgotten man. Well, a day after taking office, he'd forgotten the forgotten man.
So you write in your book that you have a chapter entitled Kleptocracy Rising. And I think this is a really important word for us Americans to familiarize ourselves with under the Trump administration. What is the definition of kleptocracy, and how does Trump's presidency fit that?
Well, a kleptocracy, it means a government of thieves and stealing from the people. And Donald Trump's whole life, he has been cheating people. So when he left the Capitol after taking the oath of office to faithfully execute the laws, and his motorcade was going to the White House, they stopped. And they got out, the whole family, and they took a two-minute turn on the street. Well, the television camera never varied from looking squarely at them, and not one of the television networks told you where they stopped. They stopped in front of the old post office and clock tower that Donald Trump had under a lease turned into a Trump hotel. Now, to people seeking favors from the Trump administration, the message was unmistakable. You will pay tribute to Donald Trump. You'll put money in his pocket if you want a favor. And indeed, the Kuwaiti government, which every year holds a lavish party in Washington, partly they call it their national day, but it's also to thank America for freeing them from Saddam Hussein. They moved their party from the Four Seasons Hotel to Trump's hotel. Lobbyists and foreign governments and diplomats and others seeking favors from this administration know that they need to be seen at that hotel where the cocktails start at $36, the steaks start at $60, and Trump's organization had filed documents before the election listing how much money they expected to lose in the first year. Instead, they're making money hand over fist. The bar alone is taking in $68,000 a night.
Wow. And it's not just his hotel in DC, it's his golf courses, it's Mar-a-Lago. There is this thing called the Emoluments Clause that you write about that was, talked about quite a bit in, in the days after his election and in the early days of his presidency. There's been a lawsuit filed by Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, but we don't hear very much about it. In any other situation with any other president, this would be the defining scandal of the presidency. But with Trump, it's just the sort of very first chapter of an increasing book about scandals.
Well, it is so easy and so inexpensive to cover the craziness and the palace intrigue in the White House. And to be fair, let's recognize that 40% of the journalism jobs in America that we had at the turn of the century are gone. Radically stripped down news staffs. You know, the days when I was in San Francisco as a Los Angeles Times national correspondent and got chewed out with my first expense account for flying coach and renting an economy car, those are long, long, long gone. Reporters sometimes have a tough time getting a cab fare to go across town. What's not being covered, and what I try to do, and it's even worse than you think, is to show what Trump is doing to our government. And let's remember, Donald Trump is our servant. He is our employee. He thinks he's our dictator. He thinks that he is a sovereign, but he's not. He's our employee. And it is our government. And what he's doing to our government is a totally contrary to the interests of ordinary Americans, but very much in the interests of the people that he and the team around him have put in there, the polluters who are now being freed to pollute widely, the predatory lenders who are being freed up to rip people off, the employers who disregard the best practices so that workers don't get maimed or killed on the job, who are now no longer being pursued by our government. This is not only a kleptocracy that's putting money into Trump's pocket through Mar-a-Lago and the government getting properties elsewhere and foreign governments putting money into his pocket. It's also what the ancient Greeks called a kakistocracy, a government of the most venal, of the worst people. And that's who Trump's brought in, the worst possible people.
And Trump's biggest sort of product as a businessman had been his brand. In becoming president, he has essentially achieved the pinnacle of brand recognition globally, right?
Yeah, you know, I make my living as a brand name author, and I'm a tiny bit of sand on the beach compared to Donald. He's been masterful at that, and I have to tell you, on that level, I admire his skill because, after all, he went into the casino business where it's really hard to lose money. And while other casinos in Atlantic City are still in business and prospering and making profits, Donald went broke. He bought an airline, went broke. He tried to bring out all sorts of products, Trump Steaks, Trump the Game, Trump Water. They all failed. He is not a successful businessman. What he is a successful cash extractor. The reason his casinos failed is that instead of reinvesting in the business, you know, making the hotel rooms a little nicer every few years, buying customer service software to help manage the customers who were there, Donald just pulled money out as fast as he could until the business failed. That's how mob bosses run enterprises. It's not how wealth-building business people do it. And just to be clear to the audience, I'm the co-founder of a successful business. I mean, it's a tiny business, $2 million a year of revenue, but it's successful. And I've run other small businesses on the side while being a journalist, because I had 8 kids I had to raise. And so I have some experience in this. And of course, I taught for 8 years in a graduate business school.
So let's talk about the fact that he has touted that the economy is absolutely thriving under him. Because if you simply listen to Donald Trump, he's the best at everything, right? So he was going to turn the economy around, he was going to champion the American worker. And a year into his presidency, he has convinced himself, or is trying to convince the country, that the country is not only well on its way, it's essentially there, that millions of new jobs created, the stock market boom. Tax incentives for businesses, etc. But in your book, it's even worse than you think. How bad is it?
Well, the economy is doing quite well, but let's understand that the recession ended on June 30th, 2009. That's a long time ago. And job growth began in March of 2010 during Barack Obama's presidency. The average number of jobs created per year during Obama's presidency was 25% higher than during the first year of Trump's. Now, we would expect job growth to slow down in this stage of the economic recovery because the number of people looking for work who don't have it has shrunk over time. But these things were all in place before Trump came into office, and they've slowed down since he came in. And as for the record high stock market, which has very high values relative to profits, well, at some point that market will fall. I can't wait to hear what Donald says. It won't be his fault. He can't go around saying it's fake news because the numbers are pretty clear every day. But trust me, Donald will make sure his fans know that it's not his fault. It must be the Democrats. It's the Democrats or it's some foreign leader or it's journalists who are talking down the economy or something. But Donald only gets credit for the upside, and he blames everybody else for anything that isn't just rosy.
Another really important part of your book is the relationship between the United States and Mexico under Donald Trump. This is a really interesting one. The way in which Trump has treated the Mexican president, referred to Mexico and Mexicans is probably unprecedented in terms of how a president has talked about another head of state, maybe with the exception of the way in which G.W. Bush talked about the heads of state of Iraq and North Korea. But certainly for a neighboring country, it's quite unprecedented, right?
Yes. Well, first of all, understand Donald Trump is a racist through and through. There have been judicial proceedings that have established his pattern of racial discrimination going back at least 45 years in employment, in rental of housing. And, you know, I've known Donald almost 30 years. I assure you, unless your definition of a rapist is you hung somebody from a tree limb, Donald Trump's through and through a racist. And I don't think
anybody... And he, of course, has repeatedly said he is the least racist person you'll
ever meet. Racist person you'll ever meet, right? Which is, you know, on its face, utter nonsense. In the Mexico situation, Donald Trump ran for office saying he's going to build this wall, as if a wall would stop people from coming here. I mean, the ancient Romans finally realized they couldn't stop people from coming to Rome from other places. The wall cannot be built as he proposes, as even his chief of staff, General Kelly, told members of the Hispanic caucus that he recognized and that Trump was misinformed. But for rallying the racists in America, and it's pretty clear from the social science research, this is somewhere between a quarter to a third of Americans, that's, you know, red meat, and it draws them into him. So he's going to continue to do that. His bigotry against Muslims, against Mexicans, basically against anybody who isn't like him, a white Northern European. And by the way, his grandfather came to America after dodging the draft in Germany. He went into business and made a fortune running whorehouses. He's a pimp. And he lied to get his citizenship. Under the standards that Donald Trump has set for people who aren't like him, his family wouldn't be here in America.
So he is also promised to make the country much friendlier to business. On that front, he certainly seems to be delivering. Let's talk about the coherence of his presidential strategy there. The tax reform bill, which was his one and only major legislative achievement and that of his party's, which certainly credit the entire party for that, in 2016, has been welcomed with open arms by American businesses. And then the second part of that strategy seems to be the doing away of any regulations for businesses from inside government departments. So it's sort of a twofold gift to businesses, right?
Well, you know, who doesn't like paying less taxes? And who doesn't like paying less taxes if you can have the government borrow the money and charge it off to people who have less than you do if you're a plutocrat? Donald Trump, in September of 2015, more than a year before the election, announced his tax plan. And he said he had all these top tax people who had all endorsed it. Well, you know, I'm a world-recognized authority on tax policy, and I couldn't find anybody who had endorsed it. But in that plan, he said married couples would not pay any income taxes on their first $50,000 of income. What Congress passed was $24,000, up from just under $22,000 in 2017. So not much of a difference, going from just under $22,000 to $24,000. And it took away all sorts of benefits. Donald loves to talk about how he supports the police. Well, police officers can no longer deduct the cost of buying their uniforms, keeping their uniforms dry cleaned, buying guns and bullets and other equipment that they are required to buy on their own, or pay their police union dues. Totally contrary to what he said. Among individuals, more than 80% of the tax cut will go to the top 1%, and most of that to the 1 in 1,000 people, the top 1/10 of 1%, who make more than $2 million a year. Now, ordinary working people, many of whom are in real straits. I mean, I wrote a trilogy of books laying out how the 90% were really being hurt by Washington. They will see $10, $20, $30, maybe $40 a week more in their paychecks. That's really good for them, except the Republicans have already announced that the way they're going to finance this is not just by borrowing more money, something Donald said was a disaster for our country, but also by cutting government services. The thing is, they're not going to start cutting the services till after the November elections because they think they can trick you one more time.
Wow. And so, of course, people buy the spin only to find that they have been screwed over after the elections. And this is, you know, how much of what Trump is doing should also be seen not just as Donald Trump himself and his, you know, but as Trumpism and as part of the Republican Party's agenda, because it's almost too easy to just blame this one individual.
Well, it is. And it's very disturbing that none of the principled Republicans beyond Jeff Flake, who's a libertarian from Arizona and whose family is basically the first family of Arizona and who cannot run for re-election for going against Trump. And for a while, Jeff Corker and now and then Lindsey Graham and John McCain have stood up to Trump. This is very, very troubling. Basically, Mitch McConnell and the rest of the Republican leadership in the Senate and Paul Ryan have decided to make their bed with Trump. And they have enabled him, and I think they are doing terrible damage. And, you know, I don't want to live in a country that has one political party. I want to have vigorous disagreements among the parties and a requirement over time that voters impose on them to get along and figure out solutions to problems. But they've sold their soul here. They have let him get away with his blatant racism, with his utter incompetence on the issues of trade and military strategy. And it's just appalling to watch and very, very deeply disturbing.
What about Trump's impact on the global community? This is another interesting thing. The Hillary Clinton presidency, if it had transpired, would have preserved the sort of standard American approach to, to the sort of neo-conservative America first, American imperialism and military supremacy. And on the issue of foreign policy, Republicans and Democrats had been fairly, on mostly the same page. There aren't that many differences between the two parties. But Trump seems to be undoing a lot of the sort of American stature that was built up under Obama.
Yeah, I mean, like it or not, there's sort of a broad consensus in Washington, or was before Trump, about foreign policy. Hillary Clinton, who knows foreign ministers and prime ministers all over the world on a first-name basis, I don't think she would have been a great president, but she would have been a deeply informed president, and she would have absolutely been the children's president and the worst nightmare that Vladimir Putin's ever run into. Donald Trump ran for office attacking China and how he believed it was ruining our economy. Who has been China's biggest friend in expanding its military, its diplomatic, and especially its economic power? Donald Trump. Trump came into office and killed the Trans-Pacific Partnership, and there's a chapter in the book about this. I was one of the most prominent critics of the Trans-Pacific Partnership because it increased monopolies and gave more power to corporations at the expense of human beings, and I thought it needed to be fixed. Trump just left a vacuum, and who has stepped into that vacuum? President Xi of China. with the RCEP, the Regional Comprehensive Economic Partnership. Now, your viewers are probably more likely than the average American to know about that. I've appeared on a number of other shows where the host had no idea, they'd never heard of the RCEP. Well, it's 15 Pacific Rim countries, not us, plus India, in a new trade pact. And when I was in Australia in the fall to talk about Trump and about tax policy, the academics, the government officials, the chambermaids, the taxi drivers, the waiters in restaurants I spoke to, the students at the university, all were talking about how Australia is subtly beginning to shift towards Beijing and away from the United States. And China's diplomats and trade ministers are out there saying, look, the United States is in decline. Just look at who's in the White House. If you want a prosperous future, pivot toward us and away from Washington. This isn't even making the mainstream news. And so, Sonali, one of the important things about my book is it's easy to be cynical about Trump. It's easy to think you know what's going on, because the Washington Press Corps is doing, I think, a quite good job of covering the palace intrigues in the White House and Donald's crazy and racist tweets. The problem is they're not covering what matters to you, your job, your children, if you're my age, your grandchildren. They're not covering what's happening to our government. And that's what I'm trying to do in this book, to show that this isn't just, you know, entertainment. As we enter, since Donald Trump now calls the cabinet room the studio and talks about how people rate his performance, this isn't just season two of Trump, the reality White House show, a political farce. This is serious business about your health and your safety, your employment, your investments, if you have them. And that's not being covered in the mainstream press. That's why I wrote, it's even worse than you think.
Finally, David, Trump recently had his physical. A lot of Americans, I think, were putting some kind of faith in a doctor's report that would show that Trump had some deep sort of mental cognitive failings that would explain his behavior. But he passed at least the mental cognitive test with flying colors. He does seem to have heart disease, which is not surprising given his diet and exercise regimen or lack thereof. So what do you make of this idea that people were invested in finding out that he was not all there mentally?
Be deeply skeptical of what the Navy doctor said. And the Washington Post and the New York Times have both run pieces quoting physicians about all of this. First of all, the cognitive test he took is for dementia. And you can find it on the internet. I took it. It's a snap. And if you were told about it in advance by someone and then asked the doctor to give it to you, and remember the doctor said he didn't plan to give such a test, Trump asked him to, it would be easy to pass that test. So when I met Donald in 1988, and by the way, someone I had dinner with the other night who I didn't know knew Donald since the same time period. We both agreed that Donald could speak in coherent paragraphs, never mind sentences, and could carry on a discussion. Now, there'd be a lot of nonsense and bluster and made up facts by Donald, because that's who he is, but he could carry on a conversation. And we're both in agreement, and I think you can see by watching him, that Donald now speaks in word salad. And he speaks in adjectives, you know, rather than saying something like, under the tax plan that we have passed, the following, and then detailing what will happen, he says, it's beautiful, it's beautiful, it's the most beautiful tax plan you've ever seen. It's so beautiful, it's just so beautiful. He's clearly had decline. Now, we all decline as we get older. When I was a boy, I could, as a parlor trick, multiply four digits by four digits in my head. I can't do that anymore. If you were to give me your phone number, I'd have to write it down because I have trouble remembering 10 digits in a row. That's normal cognitive decline as you age. And Donald and I are almost the same age. But what we're seeing with him, with the fact that he does these tweets often very early in the morning, that late in the day he stumbles, he doesn't recognize people. He didn't recognize Rudy Giuliani sitting across the table from him. Those are signs of rather serious cognitive decline. You combine that with the fact that, to be blunt, Donald's a jerk. He has no regard for other people. Everybody else to him is an object. Look at his marriages. Those are all commercial transactions. Donald's a jerk. And so you combine those two things together, and it's just really awful for America and its standing in the world.
And of course, what's really remarkable is that a number of his most ardent supporters voted for him because he's a jerk. They like that about him, right?
Well, some of them did, Sonali, but I think most of them voted for him for the reasons I laid out in my trilogy, Perfectly Legal, Free Lunch, and The Fine Print. Hmm. The bottom 90% of Americans had lower incomes on average in 2012 than in 1967. Now, I'm adjusting for inflation, but their incomes went down. And Donald ran for president on the economic platform that I laid out, and I had said for a long time, somebody runs for president on this, they're going to get elected. He just narrowed it down to these key points, you know. We're going to drain the swamp. Washington's looking out for Washington. You're the forgotten man, and I alone will save you. Indeed, that's what got him there, because the bottom 90% of Americans really do have legitimate grievances. The problem is, Donald Trump just wanted their votes. He just used them. He doesn't care about them.
Like he's used most people around him. David, I'm assuming dcreport.org is the best place to find your writings?
Yes, and you can send emails there. And if other groups, colleges or civic groups, union groups, et cetera, want to bring me back out to California, where I spent the first 40 years of my life, perfectly happy to come out again, because I think people need to learn that it isn't just what you're seeing in the news that Trump is doing. He's doing permanent damage in some areas and serious temporary damage in others to our country that's not in the news, because basically we've given up covering government now that we have much smaller news organizations.
Mm. David, thank you so much for joining us. Good luck with the book.
Thank you, Sonali.
David K. Johnston is a Pulitzer Prize-winning investigative reporter, author of the New York Times bestseller, The Making of Donald Trump. He's also written a number of other books. He's also the founder and editor of DC Report, which you can find at dcreport.org. We've been discussing his latest book, It's Even Worse Than You Think, What the Trump Administration is Doing to America. I'm Sonali Kohatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, and Vimeo.